And welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen on 1320 WILS. A new study out of Michigan State University on the development of body parts and organs and why some are more sensitive to environmental changes than others. To talk about the research, I'm joined by Alexander Shingleton, assistant zoology professor at MSU, who is leading the research, which is detailed in the recent issue of the Proceedings of the Library of Science Genetics. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Thanks very much.
Now, let's clarify what you're studying. When it comes to humans, what do we already know about how some of our body parts seem immune to environmental factors like malnutrition, while others seem more impacted?
Well, we know that in malnourished children who developed on a low diet, they end up being smaller than children who are given a good quality diet whilst they're growing. And yet they're not smaller kind of all over their bodies. So they'll be smaller, they'll have smaller kind of hearts, smaller legs, smaller limbs, smaller lungs, but their head size doesn't seem to be responding in the same way to change the nutrition. So the body seems to be protecting the size of the head and the brain specifically so that its size is maintained even though the rest of the body has become smaller.
And in terms of your research, what is it focusing on and what are you discovering?
Well, we're really interested in how the body does that. What are the mechanisms and how it controls that process? How is it that some organs are less sensitive to changes in nutrition as far as their size is concerned relative to other organs? And of course, we don't work in humans because you can't do the kind of experiments that we do on humans. So we work in fruit flies. And we're interested in how different body parts of the fruit fly respond to changes in nutrition. And we find that some respond very weakly to changes in nutrition, just like the human brain, and some respond very strongly, just like the rest of our body.
So is this essentially a survival mechanism then, that the body protects certain organs more than others?
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking about it. Yes, it's as if the body is basically protecting key important organs and letting other organs kind of shrink down.
When it comes to our own realities, I mean, we certainly don't suffer from malnutrition here in the Western world. How would this kind of understanding and research help us in terms of dealing with the diseases we face?
Well, it kind of fits into a wider question of how we deal with environmental change. And people don't, I think about a lot about how environment impacts us, but it impacts us enormously. So, for example, type 2 diabetes is really a consequence of us becoming desensitized to an environmental change. And it's also nutrition. It's not our response in this case to the changes in our body size or organ size. It's a response in how we take our body sugars. But it's actually a very similar mechanism to what we look like in flies. And so in type 2 diabetes, individuals become insensitive to changes in nutrition, and that's what causes all the problems. And so kind of our research hopefully is going to inform us on how that is regulated at a genetic level. Conversely, things like anaphylactic shock, which is an excessive immune response, is when we become hypersensitive to an environmental change. And again, if we can understand the mechanisms by which our body responds and adjusts its response to changes in the environment, then we can start to deal with some of these more important medical issues.
I mean, so in some ways then, are people then responding and have sensitivities and responses to the environment that are very unique to each other?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly general kind of rules about how people's bodies respond to the environment, but there's different individual responses as well. So we're also interested in why one individual in particular might be hypersensitive to a particular environmental change and another individual might not be. And it could be just simply the changes in how a gene is actually functioning inside key organs.
I'm talking to Alex Shingleton. He's an assistant professor of zoology at Michigan State University. Now, from what I understand, your study also involved light and the role that plays in the development of body parts when it comes to these fruit flies. What did you discover when it came to that part of your research?
Well, we're also interested in the role that circadian rhythm, that is, light coming on and off, influence kind of growth in body parts. And whilst we know that it does influence growth and body parts and flies, we're not quite sure how that's working. So that's still kind of work in progress.
in the sense that with more light, it encourages growth of certain body parts?
It's that flies become, they have, just like we have a rhythm to our day, we get up at a certain time in the morning and we have lunch and dinner at certain times, then we go to sleep at certain times. Flies also have this kind of rhythm. And if you change the photoperiod, that is how they're exposed to light, and when lights come on and come off, that changes those periods, and that will also influence their growth rate.
Is the idea ultimately that we could somehow control the sensitivity or lack of sensitivity that certain organs or body parts have to environmental conditions?
Yeah, that's ultimately what we're interested in, and not just nutrition, but generally environmental conditions, including temperature, toxins, antigens that we have immune responses to. Yes, environmental conditions in general.
Do things like warm weather and a lot of light as compared to, you know, environments like these northern climates have, which are cold and somewhat dreary in comparison, do they then appear to have a positive effect that's independent of the nutritional aspect?
That's really kind of, as far as humans concerned, that's really outside my kind of area of expertise. I know that I don't like gray weather, but I can't kind of speak to that on a developmental level.
And in terms of where this research is taking you at this point, do we really have a clear understanding of how genetically and how the body decides where to invest its resources?
This is really where this research is going. This is one of the few studies that have actually kind directly identified the genetic mechanisms by which this is working. We know that this is how this flies control their body size. What we really want to know is whether the same mechanisms are used by humans, for example. We know the genes that the flies use to do this are shared by humans. So we really want to kind of expand this and look at a larger number of species and see whether this is something that is constant across all animals or whether it's something very specific to flies.
Well, when you look at the flies, can you give me an example of how the variations you see in how they their body parts are altered by the environmental conditions you put them through?
Well, so when we take these flies, they we starve them when they're developing, and then these adult flies are very much smaller than a fly that's being well fed. And we see reductions in the size of the wings and of the eyes. But in the flies, it's not so much the brain that doesn't respond to change in nutrition. It's actually the size of the male genitalia that don't become smaller. So they're basically the same size in large and small flies.
No kidding. So that is ultimately what their genetics considers the most important aspect of their biology. Now, when it comes to humans, is it just the brain that seems to be protected when it comes to malnutrition?
That's a good question. It looks like there's different levels of protections for different organs. So it's certainly true that the brain is probably the most protected organs, but different organs do have different responses to changes in nutrition. And we would predict that the mechanisms that protect the brain are perhaps acting also in these other organs that are being somewhat protected too, but at different degrees.
And in terms of applying this type of understanding, you're saying that in the case of diabetes, there's a lack of sensitivity to insulin, and the idea would be that we could somehow recreate the sensitivity that was there previously?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So we could just... We know that it's really the changes in a single gene in flies that is changing the sensitivity. And this gene is shared by humans as well, and it also controls the response of humans to changes in nutrition and insulin. And so we could just be increasing the expression level, the amount this gene is produced in specific tissues, may be a candidate therapy for something like type 2 diabetes.
Alexander Shingleton, Assistant Zoology Professor at Michigan State University. Thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for letting me talk about my work.
And we will be back with more. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.